the Hawks have clinched the 10th seed and the final playing spot in the postseason, and we're here to talk about it. I'm Lauren Williams, host of the Hawks Report from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, as well as the beat writer, and we're so excited, as always, to talk about the Hawks and what we've seen from them over the last week. Of course, I'm joined by handy-dandy producer Daniel Salerson, and if you're joining us for the first time, please make sure to follow the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Hawks Report from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.
Hip-hop is a product of black people. It's a product of black song and celebration.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution presents
hip-hop's most pulled elements are pulled from the South.
A Southern hip-hop story.
We always go back to that moment of the Source Awards.
Everybody wants your rhythm, but they don't want your blues.
The biggest names in hip-hop.
Atlanta is still the mecca for hip-hop.
50 years.
No one can deny.
One film.
The power of the South now.
The South got something to say. Streaming now at ajc.com/hip-hop.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Hawks Report. And, of course, at the top of the show, it cannot go without saying the Hawks have clinched the final spot in the play-in tournament. I mean, Daniel, they've had this spot since basically January. So I don't think it comes really as a surprise to anyone that they have managed to nab that final spot. But I think a lot of people were hoping that they could have made up some ground and climbed in the standings. But alas, the Hawks did not do that. And I don't know if we're too surprised with how they've played over the course of the season that they weren't able to kind of climb in the standings. They've, of course, been playing a lot better as of late, but at this point in the season, a lot of things are kind of decided in the bottom half of the last four spots in the Eastern Conference. I mean, when you look at the standings for the top eight, it's like between two games and 0.5 games that separate, you know, those top spots, with the Celtics really having a huge hold on the number one spot. But the Hawks and Bulls are still kind of battling out for that ninth seed. But I think I'm excited to see the Hawks in the play-in, weirdly, despite everything that's happened over the course of this season. But we know that they've had success in the play-in in the past. We know what they've been capable of doing when they're playing in the 9th-10 game, and they made it out into the playoffs. So, of course, things are going to be a little bit different because who they might face up against in the first round, if they are able to get out of the play-in tournament, is going to be Boston. And we kind of know what their success rate is against the Celtics in a 7-game series, but at least they still have another chance at the playoffs, right? They're still going. Their season is extended, even if it's just for one game. What do you think, Daniel?
Yeah, I think the goal for every team is to make the playoffs, no matter if it's the play-in or if you are able to get in that top six and don't have to worry about the play-in. And the Hawks seems like they are the play-in king since the format has been determined like this. And so, yeah, I think maybe once the Trae Young injury happened, you probably thought they would solidify, you know, nothing worse than the 10th spot. You were hoping that maybe they can somehow climb to 8 or 7 at some point. But again, just the inconsistencies of this team did not allow that to happen. But again, I've always been the fan of playoff basketball is better than no basketball. Mm-hmm. I don't care about the lottery pick. You being 14th is really not going to get you any closer to a top pick. It's rarely happened. So again, for some of these young guys to sniff the playoffs, guys like Kobe Bufkin, Vic Krejci, to have that playoff experience, whether it's one game, whether it's two, I feel like that's still a step in the right direction than them not being in the playoffs. Of course, I think this team had higher expectations, so that part is disappointing. The fact that being in the 9-10 game means, like you mentioned, you have to win two in order to get in, and it's, you know, one game you lose and you're out. Whereas 7-8, you know, you could win one game and be done and at least make it in. So that's going to be the tough part. But the cool thing is, with the six games to go, you are battling for ninth. So maybe that play-in can be a home game before you hit the road if you win that one. So there is something to play for, which you have been seeing from them, the way they've been playing this week, besides maybe the Dallas game, but that was the second night of a back-to-back. So I'm encouraged the fact that they're in. I think it's a nice thing to know that they are in with six games to go. But yeah, I think disappointing for sure that you wanted to see them not in the 10th spot, but here we are.
I think Quinn Snyder would kind of share the similar sentiment that we both have, that at least, you know, they're continuing the season on and they're continuing to give themselves a chance at making it into the playoffs. And here's what he had to say after the team clinched that 10th spot on Wednesday night.
It's always good to have an opportunity to play in the postseason, you know, whether you're 9th, 10th, you know, 6th, whatever it is. And obviously, you know, we've got some games left and see where that goes. And like, as I said, you know, just hopefully we can continue to get better. And, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But it's good to know that we'll be playing.
Yeah. So, again, it's still team snip snap. Obviously, you did have the caveat, Daniel, about them playing the Mavericks on the second night of the back-to-back. And it definitely, in being in Dallas and watching that game, it certainly looked like they were a team on the second night of a back-to-back, at least after the first quarter. You know, that start that they had, they came out ready, they came out firing, they held Luka Doncic to 0-5 shooting in his first 6 minutes, and it was phenomenal watching the defense that DeAndre Hunter kind of had on him. And if you remember, Luka dropped 73 points on the Hawks when they faced them back in January, but they didn't have DeAndre Hunter then. And they had him back on Thursday night when they were in Dallas. And it took Luka, I think, like 7 minutes to score a basket, because he didn't hit a shot until, I believe, it was like there was like 7:12 or something left in the second quarter when he came back in for his second stint. And most of the points, when you kind of go back and watch that game, a lot of those baskets came when he got the switch onto someone else and Hunter wasn't the primary defender. So I think that should tell people how important DeAndre, if they didn't know before before Thursday night, how important DeAndre Hunter is to this team's perimeter defense, and how he always has one of the toughest matchups, like toughest individual matchups on a nightly basis. So it's a tough loss, but I definitely think we saw some positive things. What did you think about the game? And then I'll continue talking about what I watched on Thursday night.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think those who don't know DeAndre Hunter should know that. I mean, one of the reasons why he was the number four pick overall was not just his offense, but his defense. And I think maybe his defense may be the reason why he was the number four overall pick. And then the good thing is he was a really good offensive player coming out of Virginia. Sometimes the offense has not been with him, but at the same time, the defense has been pretty consistent, I think, with him throughout his entire career. So yeah, the fact that you were holding Luka to that again, and I think that's a big thing for, you know, that's the hardest thing about DeAndre Hunter's job, is when you expect so much offense, you're using so much of your energy guarding the best player every night. And so when it comes to the offensive end, some nights it might just be a little tougher for him because he is exerting so much energy in guarding the other team's best player. So, and it was kind of the tale of a team being on the second night of a back-to-back. Usually that momentum continues into the first quarter of the next game, and then the legs start to give out gradually throughout quarters 2, 3, and 4. And I feel like that was kind of the case for the Hawks. But there were plenty of positives, I think, to take away. I think one of the players that you'll probably mention is Kobe Bufkin. I thought he played a pretty strong game for him coming back from injury. And again, we've been wanting to see him for a while now, especially with the injury to Trae Young. Like, this is a perfect time to give Kobe some experience. And I feel like a night like last night was a perfect opportunity for him. And I thought defensively he played solid trying to guard Kyrie Irving. He had some great shots, including the end of that first quarter. But yeah, overall, again, it was a loss, but there were positives to take away from their loss against Dallas.
Absolutely. I think, you know, we continue to see that the Hawks are in many ways really developing a system as far as that internal development that, you know, they talked so much about on Media Day and building good habits. And a guy like Kobe Bufkin, who you can see that development happening every time he steps onto the court, it's rewarding. And he kind of had a similar sentiment that, you know, a lot of hard work goes into having moments like he had against Kyrie Irving. And we've seen it before too, but on Thursday night, defensively, I think that was just one of his strongest outings. And I think the future is bright for Kobe Bufkin, especially if he can stay healthy. You know, the fact that he's had two injuries in his rookie season is unfortunate. And so you just hope as he continues to mature and gain strength and work with NBA athletic trainers and strength conditioning coaches and all the like, continue working on his diet and his habits of taking care of his body after games, that, you know, he'll be able to overcome some of these early health scares, if you will, or injury scares, if you will, where he's missed some time. But the fact that he's getting some significant minutes, particularly now with, you know, Trae Young out for, you know, recovering from surgery, it's huge for his development. And I think one of the best moments that we saw on Thursday night that had me kind of popping up out of my seat is Kyrie Irving in the first quarter called for a screen from Maxi Kleber, and Bufkin kind of just like kept fighting through the screen and recovered and ended up handling the switch by initially going on to Kleber as Kyrie tried to go ISO with Jalen Johnson. But then Bufkin, as Jalen kind of drove Kyrie in toward the elbow, Bufkin moved to help. And that created just enough time for Bruno to kind of come over and get some help. And when Kyrie kind of faked to go up for a layup, Bruno kind of got in and created a body sort of and forced him to dump off to Kleber. And then Bufkin was just able to kind of get the steal when Kleber was trying to recover. And that got the Hawks out in transition. And so just his defensive instincts as a rookie is phenomenal. And the more that the Hawks can kind of help him hone that and continue to help him develop that, I think that's kind of the shift that we're seeing in the culture. And maybe the Hawks won't be a team that's known for not being defensive. But I think Quinn Snyder, of course, is pleased with how Bufkin did, particularly with the fact that this is only his second game back in the rotation after missing the last 14 with that left big toe sprain. But here's what Snyder had to say about how Bufkin did on Thursday night.
Yeah, you know, he did a good job. We extended him a little bit. That group was playing well, and he was a part of that, a big part of it. So just want him to, you know, make plays for other people, but also, you know, to be aggressive when he's open and take a shot. And he had one in pick and roll where he cut back and pulled up and made a nice little 15-footer. And, you know, that's the way he has to play, and he's doing that, and it's good to, you know, he's excited to be healthy as well.
So we're seeing lots of good things out of the young guys, you know, down the stretch. And, you know, if they were on a team that were quote unquote rebuilding, this is kind of the prime time that you would be watching the young guys as some of those teams start to shut veterans down and everything like that. And that's when you start to see some of those young players start to shine. And as we mentioned with Bufkin, you're seeing some of that hard work really pay off in ways that as they move throughout their career, the progress, if you will kind of look a little bit more incremental, where you may not necessarily see dramatic shifts in their game. But one guy who we're still seeing dramatic shifts in his game, even though he's only been in the league for, you know, 3 years, is Jalen Johnson, who got his first career triple-double on Wednesday night in the Hawks' win over Detroit, Danielle.
Yeah, what a, I wouldn't say weird game it was, but it was a pretty weird game against Detroit when, you know, it's one of those games that now you're going to have in your head.
It's a trap game.
name a random 50-point player in the NBA, and yeah. Malachi Flynn has joined that club, which you just kept seeing like, what is going on here? What am I missing here? Yep. Is this the real Malachi Flynn that I've known for a while that's bounced around in the NBA? Yes, it is. But let's go back to Jalen, because, I mean, we already knew this was the type of player he could be. I think the only thing that we really didn't see was the passing. And he's certainly a capable passer, but you never thought he'd be creeping into double digits and him getting a triple-double. So it's just one of the things that keeps verifying and validating, you know, why the Hawks should be building around him for the future. And you're seeing that in front of our very eyes. And kind of going back to Kobe a little bit, and the difference between, you talk about some of these younger players on teams that are rebuilding these last six games, the difference between them and Jalen and Kobe is they're playing meaningful games still. And that's why I think it's so important, especially for the play-in, that they're not playing games like, okay, just work on this or work on this. No, these are real game situations, and they're still fighting for something. And of course, with Quinn Snyder too, he's not going to be throwing in the towel at all until, you know, the season's over. He's not going to do any of that. So it's not just learning, it's executing. And you're seeing them, I don't care if it's Detroit, I don't care if it's the Wizards, you're getting a triple-double is really hard to do in this game. I know it's a little easier now, it feels like, with just some of the talent that the NBA has, but it's still not an easy feat to do, and nor is 50 points per game, which we saw in the same game. So, again, it just solidifies what Jalen, we've seen from him, what type of player that he is, how excited I am. I know everyone is for his future and for his future in Atlanta. But the same goes for Kobe too. I just think that you talked about him, you know, being injured and, you know, just learning the NBA lifestyle is so dramatically different than the college game, and just learning how to take care of your body, the travel after playing. Like, he's been probably traveling a little bit maybe with them when he wasn't playing, but now you're playing meaningful minutes, you have to rest your body, you have to eat right, you have to handle yourself on the road as far as what you do, what you don't do, the sleep that you get, things like that, which, again, Kobe, you know, had to play a lot of games at Michigan, but it's a whole different beast. And I think that's where the value comes in during a quote unquote playoff run that this team is having. I know it's again for the play-in, but with six games left to go, they are still fighting to have that home court. And I think that's valuable for all of them to play that first game at home against Chicago instead of being on the road. So, but going back to Jalen, again, I'm not surprised. I'm glad it's happened that he got his triple-double, but nothing surprises me with him anymore. And I think that's one of the fun things about watching this team play, is you never know what you're going to get out of Jalen each night.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things, you know, we shouldn't be surprised that, you know, Jalen finally achieved a triple-double, because he's flirted with it so many times throughout the season. I think, you know, I asked, shout out to Brad Rowland, but I asked him, like, what would be the threshold that you would say somebody flirted with a triple-double? Because you could say, you know, DeJounte flirted with a triple-double so many times, but, you know, when he's had six rebounds, six assists, or something like that. But if you want to say, okay, seven is the number, because it's harder to, of course, get, you know, that eight and nine, ten, as we've seen, because there have been times we've tweeted out, so-and-so is on triple-double watch, and then they stay at, like, eight rebounds for a full quarter, or they just needed like three assists and they can't get it. Or like in some cases they needed one rebound and they couldn't get it. So, but if we're saying seven is a number, then you could say that Jalen has at least flirted with it four times. So it shouldn't be a surprise that he's finally achieved it. But I as you said, it's just been amazing watching them continue. And so when I say them, you know, the young guys and Kobe and Jalen get some of those meaningful minutes in games where things, there are still serious implications, right? And it just kind of reminds you how competitive this league is, of course, but also just how injuries can really, you know, change the course of a season for so many teams, or even just players in general. Particularly, we haven't seen AJ Griffin for almost an entire season when you consider the fact that there are only five games left. We haven't seen Mo Gay have any even garbage time minutes, maybe in the beginning of the season, but nothing from him. And then Seth Lundy, another two-way player on this team. So it's just, it's tough that, you know, the injury bug has not only bit some of the veteran players in the butt, but also some of their young guys too.
Yeah, I think, though, in some ways, too, when you have some of these young guys, I know, like, with the Kobe Bufkin, it's different, but on good teams, you really don't want to see those guys playing. And I guess garbage time is a different situation, but you want to have an impactful team that you're not needing those guys in big-time situations, even though it's good for their growth. So that it is one thing to take away from it, but you know, you talk about the triple-doubles. Wasn't it the other day that Chris Middleton begged Doc Rivers to keep him in because he just needed a couple more points to get his triple-double? So
exactly. You
want to talk about how hard it is, you know, when players have that opportunity, like, let me just get these 2 points and he can take me out. Mm-hmm. I know they were up like 20 mm-hmm. points, but you know, that triple-double is there forever. No matter if that's his only one ever in his career, to say you've done one in the NBA is pretty special. So, but yeah, you do miss being able to see some of those young guys develop. And again, I think the Hawks have certainly taken advantage of their G League. And one of the reasons why each team should get a G League and are now finally having one, I think the Hawks have utilized it perfectly this year with, especially, you know, Vic Krejci crediting his time there as far as why he's been doing so well with the Hawks. And so credit to them that, you know, you kind of got that minor league team to kind of build your farm system. If you're going to use a baseball term, it is opening day home opener for the Braves, so you might as well use a baseball term right now. So I give them a lot of credit for the development of these guys, and I think they might be ahead of the game come next year because of their development there in College Park.
Absolutely. And just to really last point on the Jalen Johnson triple-double to kind of highlight how tough it has been for this Hawks team to see guys reach that feat. It's been over a year since the last Hawks player had a triple-double in DeJounte Murray when he faced the Pelicans on November 5th, 2022. You are listening to the Hawks Report from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
The AJC's trusted veteran political voices, Greg Bluestein, Patricia Murphy, Tia Mitchell, and Bill Nigut, are the essential source for Georgia politics. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution's Politically Georgia. Sign up for the newsletter, download the podcast, subscribe to the AJC.
I'm Ernie Suggs.
And I'm Ned Ravone. Atlanta has been known as the Black Mecca for so many years, but that means something different to everybody.
It means everything to me. Every day I wake up, I learn something new.
Well, you all can learn something new by subscribing to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's new newsletter called Unapologetically ATL. It's all about the people, the events, and the entertainment happening in Metro Atlanta that Black people might want to know about.
So subscribe today at www.ajc.com/unapologeticallyATL.
And welcome back to the Hawks Report from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. We are so excited to announce a great deal for Greater Atlanta. For a limited time, subscribe and you'll get digital access to the AJC for just $1.99 per week for life. So as long as you're a new subscriber and as long as you keep your subscription, you have access to the substance and soul of the South, including breaking news and in-depth investigations, food, sports, business, and so much more from AJC.com every day for the rest of your life. Subscribe now by going to AJC.com/start. That's AJC.com/start. To take advantage of the South's biggest deal. All right, Daniel, I feel like we cannot talk about the Hawks post All-Star break without bringing up how much Clint Capela has been an impact for this team, or has had an impact on this team. I think a lot of people know that he's had plenty of talent over the course of his career. And, you know, with injuries and everything, you know, there have been times that people have wondered, you know, can he get back to his former self, or, you know, the guy who was in the running for a defensive player of the year a few years ago. But I think, quite honestly, we're starting to see him kind of round back into shape as of lately.
Yeah, I agree. I think the kind of knock on him in this day and age with basketball is made that small ball that helped was made him so effective in Houston and in his early days in Atlanta is kind of not there anymore, where he can't use that speed in order to get, you know, around players. And it kind of, his lack of offense has kind of hurt him a little bit, where, you know, players defensively are kind of just letting him go because he doesn't have a lot in his bag, but he would get a lot of his points based in transition and on second chance opportunities. And I feel like that's kind of where he's been thriving now, but I think the offense is starting to catch up a little bit with the defense. And you knew the defense was always there. You mentioned defensive player of the year candidates back in the day. But especially with the injury to Kongwu, I mean, his importance down there as the Hawks center has been super important during this time, because if Clint wasn't productive during this time, I mean, who knows where the Hawks would be in this situation right now, the way he's been playing. Not only has it been his offense, but of course the defense, his rebounding has still been there. But it's been nice to see kind of the, I don't want to say the Clint of old, but I guess it kind of is the Clint of old. And I mean, that's why the Hawks got him, you know.
Absolutely.
Not a long time ago. I feel like it's a long time ago, but it was a long time ago.
It does feel like it was just, what, 4 years ago?
Yeah, which I guess, is that considered a long time ago now?
In NBA years.
In NBA years. Okay, not in, we're not going to do it in people years.
No.
Okay, good.
But just to kind of highlight how, you know, it's been such a, it's just been like he's kind of rounded back into form, if you will. You know, over the last, you know, 14 games or so, he is just been a monster on the boards. I mean, we've always known that Clint has been one of the top rebounders in the league for a while. This season, he was leading the league in offensive rebounds per game. But over the last 15 games, Capella has been averaging 12.5 points and 11.9 rebounds per game in 27 minutes. He's also been shooting at a 58% clip from the floor. His free throws, still shaky, unfortunately. I think that's another knock that people might have on him, is that he can't capitalize on his trips to the line, particularly because he does get you know, a solid amount of trips in about three per game for a big man. Obviously, you'd love to see him get some more calls his way, but he's one of the top free throw attempters on this team. And so you'd love to see him kind of capitalize a little bit more on those trips to the line. But, you know, we've been seeing some really good things from his sky hook. We've been also seeing him get the ball out more instead of going up for his usual putbacks. And I think that's huge, because it's contributed to the Hawks' most recent shooting stretch, where they've been really knocking shots down. I mean, you know, teams have to really contend with this eyes out mentality that the Hawks have been employing, and getting the ball out to their shooters. And we've seen Bogdanović, Murray, you can go to Johnson. You know, so many people have been just hitting shots. And so part of that is because their centers have been, and that's also Bruno Fernando, but their centers have kind of been the connector on the floor for this team offensively. And I think it's just been awesome seeing the impact that Capella has been having. Of course, this season, his numbers offensively haven't been perfect. The team still typically does better with him off the floor offensively. If you're looking at some of the on-off numbers, over the course of this year, the team is a minus 2.6 points per possession off on offense, and a minus 3.3% effective field goal percentage. But where he really shines, of course, as I mentioned, is offensive rebounding, where he's in the top he's in the 95th percentile according to Cleaning the Glass, and they're plus 6.2% on offensive rebounding percentage. But where I think his numbers really shine, and as you mentioned, Daniel, is defensively, where, you know, they're a minus 4.4 on off numbers, and that puts him in the 84th percentile for that. So yeah, I think the Hawks can really benefit from, you know, holding on to Capella a little bit longer. I know Okongwu has been, you know, kind of in line to be the presumptive starter when the team eventually moves on from them. But as, you know, people on the beat and I have joked about sometimes, because when you look at Okongwu's offensive numbers and then you look at Clint's defensive numbers, you just wish that you could kind of combine them into one center. Is there a way that the Hawks can kind of combine their skills and create one super center?
With artificial intelligence, I don't think that's out of the question here. So maybe maybe next year that's something they work on in the offseason. But yeah. I agree with you. I mean, that's kind of the big thing. But you mentioned it too, that because the offense has kind of been up recently for him, is it's so hard when a team has an offensive liability out there. I don't think Clint's ever been technically labeled a liability.
He's not a liability.
But it's been at times where you have defenses, again, when you don't really have to worry about one person as much. It kind of hurts the other shooters where you can pay more attention to some of those guys that you do want to get open eventually and get some good shots in. And so when you have Clint playing an all-around game, you mentioned it makes defenses have to keep their head on a swivel and pay attention to Clint a little bit more, opening up the doors for some of the shooters out there for the Hawks. So I think that's where this plays out for Clint right now and how effective he is for Atlanta. The defense, again, has always been there, I think, for the most part, and not surprisingly, especially the offensive rebounding numbers, what he's able to do, getting second chance points and putting it back up. But the offense, if that can continue to stay consistent, that's really all you need from him. You know, you average at 12 points, 11 rebounds per game. You'll take that from Clint any day of the week.
Absolutely. And we saw that on full display in their win over the Bulls on Monday night that helped them to kind of tie things up or kind of move a little bit closer to the Bulls, because that win put them just half a game back in the standings, and then their win over Detroit tied things up. So I think, you know, obviously the Hawks will want to continue to see even more out of Clint, particularly with Okongwu still recovering from that left big toe sprain. And then, of course, they're going to want to see even more from Fernando. But I think one of the things that's interesting is when you look at Clint's plus minus numbers over the last 17 games, there really has been only like four games where he's ended it with a minus number, but everything else has been overwhelmingly positive.
I mean, consistency is the name of the game, and we've talked about that ever since last season. So as long as you're consistent, you're doing right by the Hawks right now.
Absolutely, and it's going to pay off as they continue into this final week. You know, we mentioned that there are two wins with over Chicago and then Detroit kind of even things up for them, but then they're back to... I can't even call it zero anymore, but they're back to where they were after their loss in Dallas. They're half a game back from the Bulls. And it's just going to keep being a race for, you know, them to potentially get that ninth seed and some home court advantage in that first playing game. But maybe, you know, something might swing their way. The Bulls do face, as of Friday afternoon, early afternoon when we're recording this podcast, the Bulls' final six games, three of them include matchups against the Knicks. Two of them will be in Chicago, one of them will be in New York, but then they have a matchup against the Magic, which could be a tough one for them. The Magic are cooking right now and currently are in fourth and are on a three-game win streak as of Friday afternoon. And then they have matchups against the Wizards and Pistons, which could be trap games with how both of those teams play. So you just maybe hope that one of those teams can spoil the Bulls' party a little bit. But the Hawks, you know, they also have a schedule that maybe may not work out in their favor with four of the last six games on the road. You mentioned Dallas already. They play in Denver on Saturday night, and then two games at home, and then they're back on the road for the final two.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for the Hawks because I think a lot of these teams are going to have something to play for. You look at Indiana, who's sitting a half game ahead as we look at it right now for six. And if you're battling for that 6-7, you know you're going to play for some because six guarantees that you're just playing a first-round matchup and not in the play-in. Same goes for Miami, who you play next week as well. They're a half game behind Indiana. You look at Minnesota, who's battling for the one seed in the Western Conference. So you're looking at those teams that the Hawks still have to play here. The Hornets are probably the only team that are not fighting for anything at the moment. And we've seen how much trouble the Hawks have had with the Hornets this year. And I mean, maybe they're playing for Steve Clifford too, you know, in his final few games of the regular season as he heads towards an advisory role with the squad. And you mentioned the Nuggets game. The Nuggets are battling with the Timberwolves for the one top spot in the Western Conference. So seeding matters. And so I feel like it's unless somehow the Pacers by next Sunday clinch the sixth seed and then maybe sit out some guys. But I think in every one of these matchups, you're going to have the other team playing for something. But I think the Hawks also, granted, are going to be a team playing for something too. I think there is going to be some emphasis to see if they can pass the Bulls as far as trying to get that home court for that first play-in game. And if you look at New York, they're playing them three times. They're battling for Orlando for home court in the first round. And so Orlando still has stuff to play for. Orlando is just a half game back of three. So they're going to continue to play hard, and the Knicks are going to continue to play hard. I know they have the tough news with Julius Randle, being out for the year, but they're going to slowly get OG Anunoby back.
Jalen Brunson still playing out of his mind.
There's just
so much that's up in the air. I will add the caveat that the Hornets will be playing for also is future contracts. I mean, granted, some of them are locked up into things, but they've got a new GM. They've got a new assistant GM. The front office is changing. The plan could be changing. You know, who knows if they're still building around LaMelo Ball. Maybe they've shifted gears and Brandon Miller is the guy that they're building around. So guys will be looking to prove that they should still be on this team. So every team is playing for something at this point, even if it's not the postseason. They're still playing for the future. They're still auditioning for the other 29 teams in the league. And, yeah, nobody wants to be the guy that's on the outside looking in ever. So it's still competitive.
I will enjoy some scoreboard watching this next week. I think that's the best part of the final week of the NBA is the scoreboard watching, not only for the Hawks and the Bulls, but for other teams and seedings around the NBA, that Western Conference for the play-in. Can you imagine some of those teams that still could be in the play-in, whether it's you can have the Mavericks, Lakers, Kings, and Warriors all in the play-in, which everyone thought all those teams would be maybe a top six seed. Yeah, in the playoffs. So it's going to be wild. I love this part of the year between baseball, kicking back up the Final Four, both men's and women's. And now you have the postseason stretch NBA. Here for the NBA. It's a fun time of the year.
It is a fun time of the year. But one guy who could be not the outside looking in, but maybe the sidelines watching. We still, you know, are uncertain of what the plan is for Trae Young and whether he will be back in time to be ready for the play-in game against the Bulls. Last update we had was he was doing small finger exercises, but maybe the prudent thing is to not bring him back for the play-in, even if he is ready.
That's the thing. I would think he would play in the play-in if he could. Because I just think Trae's in his competitive nature is going to want to play in a potential playoff series, especially if they get a rematch with the Boston Celtics again in the playoffs in 1-8. But in that case, I think you need a ramp up. So, like, for me, are we watching to see whether it's Tuesday, Wednesday? So wouldn't you think his injury designation would need to change in one of those games, even if it's upgrade the questionable?
Yeah.
To kind of get the idea of whether they might ramp him up before the play-in? Because I don't think you're just going to go from him being out to available.
I would have thought that, you know, because he wasn't on this trip. So I would have anticipated that they would have at least maybe had him ready to play against the Hornets. So he played the final three games, especially since he would likely be on a minutes restriction. I couldn't anticipate them having him play against the Heat as his first game back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That would just be like...
What about Friday? What about him playing Friday and Sunday?
That was also something that I speculated, but I figured that if he... They would have him play against the Hornets, you know, maybe, you know, the 10 to 15 minutes, 10 to 20 minutes, see how he did. Have him then go back against the Timberwolves because that's a tough matchup regardless. And then the Pacers, again, another tough matchup, you know. I anticipated that the Hornets game would have just been a let's see how he is and then we'll go from there sort of game. And, like, maybe with the Timberwolves game and then the Pacers game, the minutes would kind of steadily increase so that when they were ready to go for that play-in game, you know, they could have him for the full workload maybe.
I think, in my opinion, going back to the injury designation, I think he at least needs to be questionable at least by Wednesday. Yeah. Maybe play by Friday and Sunday. But if he's out for both of those games, I just don't see him playing in the regular season. Which makes me think then you don't maybe play in the play-in game.
Yeah.
I just think you have to have a ramp up for him just for more of the shooting purposes. I know he's probably getting shots up and stuff like that, working on his finger, but also the conditioning level. And I know you can get some of that, but again, being in game shape compared to just being in shape is a whole different animal, especially in the NBA. So he's going to have to get that ramp up in order, I think, to be productive in a game in the play-in. I just don't think they're going to bring him back as a decoy for an important matchup. So I think, if in my opinion, if you don't see that injury designation move up to questionable by at least Tuesday or Wednesday, then I don't see him playing. But again, that's just a complete guess, and who knows what could happen.
I agree, but we'll be here watching along and keeping an eye out to see what the Hawks do, and maybe they don't bring him back because things have been rolling so well and they continue to give him time to heal. And but we'll see how it goes. I'm Lauren Williams, Hawk here at the HAC and your host of the Hawks Report. Thank you all for listening, and we'll be back next week.